Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be able to listen only until the question and answer portion of today's conference. To ask a question, please press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn your conference over to Ms. Miss, you may begin.
Thank you, Julie. This is Kathy Harbin. I'm chief of CDC's News Media Branch. Thank you all for joining us today for the release of a new CDC Vital Signs, this one on trends in opioid prescribing and how the amount of opioids prescribed to patients varies widely from county to county in the United States. We're joined today by CDC's acting director, Dr. Ann Schuchat. We also have Dr. Deborah Dowell. She's one of the authors of the study, and she'll join during the question and answer period. I'll now turn the call over to Dr. Schuchat.
Thank you, Kathy, and thanks everyone for joining today's call to discuss CDC's Vital Signs report. Each month, we focus on the latest data about one of the critical health issues facing our nation and what can be done about it. This month, we're looking at opioid prescribing trends at the county level and across the nation. To start with some good news, half of U.S. counties saw a decrease in the amount of opioids prescribed per person from 2010 to 2015. Overall, opioid prescribing in the United States is down 18% since 2010. We measure prescribing in morphine milligram equivalents, or MME. We saw a drop from 782 MMEs per person in 2010 to 640 MMEs per person in 2015. But despite these overall declines, the bottom line remains we still have too many people getting opioid prescriptions for too many days at too high a dose. The amount of opioids prescribed in 2015 was still about three times as high as in 1999, and we see tremendous variation between counties. Opioid prescribing varies as much from place to place as the weather, and even neighboring counties can have a major difference in prescribing levels. In 2015, six times more opioids per resident were dispensed in the highest prescribing counties than in the lowest prescribing counties. Higher prescribing practices place residents in these counties at greater risk for opioid addiction, overdose, and death. In addition, the dramatic increase we've been seeing in heroin overdose is another tragic consequence of exposing too many people to prescription opioids, since most people who use heroin started off with misusing prescription opioids. We're now experiencing the highest drug overdose death rates ever recorded in the United States, driven by prescription opioids and by illicit opioids like heroin and illicitly manufactured fentanyl. In today's report, among many significant factors, we saw higher opioid prescribing in counties that had small cities or towns, had a greater percentage of white residents, were where a higher concentration of primary care physicians and dentists worked, or where more people were uninsured or unemployed, and where more people had diabetes, arthritis, or disabilities. But these factors together only explained about a third of the wide variation in opioid prescribing across the U.S. in 2015. The findings suggest that we need more consistency among healthcare providers on the appropriate use of opioids. The 2016 CDC guideline for prescribing opioids for chronic pain offers providers recommendations to improve opioid prescribing practices. We can think of the high opioid prescribing in three parts. One part of the problem is that too many opioid prescriptions are being written. In 2015, there were 71 opioid prescriptions for every 100 people in America. Non-opioid therapy is preferred for chronic pain treatment, excluding cancer treatment, palliative, or end-of-life care. some options of non-opioid therapy include pain medicines like acetaminophen, ibuprofen, and naproxen, physical therapy and exercise, cognitive behavioral therapy. Another part of the problem is that opioid prescriptions are given for too many days. Anyone taking opioids can become addicted to them. After taking them for just a few days, a person becomes more likely to take them long term. Taking even a low dose opioid for more than 3 months increases the risk of addiction by 15 times. The average day's supply per prescription increased 33% from 13 days to nearly 18 days from 2006 to 2015. Finally, too high a dose is the third aspect of high prescribing. A dose of 50 MME or more per day doubles the risk of opioid overdose death compared to 20 MME or less per day. At 90 MME or more, the risk increases 10 times. Average daily MME per prescription remained steady from 2006 to 2010, and then went down 17% from 2010 to 2015. But still, the average MME per prescription remains high. High doses of opioids have not been shown to reduce chronic pain better than low doses. Healthcare providers have an important role in offering safer and more effective pain treatments to patients. As a doctor, I'm familiar with the complexities of pain management and how important it is to have an ongoing and individualized dialogue with each patient. I've also been a witness to the very real and devastating impact that opioid addiction can have on individuals, families, and communities. As a public health leader, I see the value of data to guide efforts and the importance of consumer and provider education. The data we're releasing today show that we have more work to do to protect Americans from the risks of opioid addiction, overdose, and death. So what can be done to curb this epidemic? The findings from today's Vital Signs provide critical new information on trends in opioid prescribing, differences in geography, and contributing factors. But no region is exempt. Taking a careful look at the range of prescribing practices across the country and even with our own states or county can give insight into where we can make the largest strides in improving care. Everyone has a role to play to help address this issue and become part of the solution. From healthcare providers who can follow the CDC guideline on appropriate prescribing for chronic pain, to consumers who can take medicines as directed and store them safely, to state and local public health who can improve the usability of prescription drug monitoring programs and track hotspots where overdoses are occurring. Community coalitions, like ones I met with last week in Kentucky, can give voice to these challenges and help us feel the urgent need to work together toward solutions. The bottom line here is simple. With opioid medications, we're still seeing too many getting too much for too long. The amount of opioids prescribed in 2015 was enough for every American to be medicated round the clock for 3 weeks. The opioid overdose epidemic didn't arise overnight, and we won't be able to resolve it overnight. But changes in annual prescribing from 2006 to 2015 hold promise that prescribing practices can improve. The 2016 CDC guidelines release was a vital step towards this end. Its recommendations can be used to ensure appropriate use of prescription opioids and improve care for all people. Thank you, and let me return to the operator.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Shookit. Julie, we are now ready for questions, please.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name and your company name. To withdraw your request, press star 2. One moment, please. Our first question comes from Dennis Thompson with Health Day. Your line is open.
Thank you for taking my question, Dr. Shukit. You said that county by county there's a lot of variation. Are there any particular regions of the United States where prescription opioids seem to be more freely prescribed than others?
You know, we've been tracking geographic trends both in prescribing and in the overdose problem, and the Appalachian region has been really hard hit. They've taken that to heart and are really have quite a few programs that are trying to address this. But in our map of today's data for 2015, we still do see the Appalachian area hard hit. I think a key issue, though, is that no part of the country is spared. We see within every state some high prescribing counties. There's parts of the western U.S. that have very high prescribing and parts of the Midwest as well. And so we know that, you know, today there are very few towns, cities, or even families that don't have some connection with the opioid problem, and we think there's a lot more that we can do working together.
Thank you.
Next question.
Our next question comes from Heidi Spleen with Internal Medicine News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for doing the conference and for taking my call. I realize this was breaking down the data mainly by county, but do you have any data about by condition or by clinical specialty for this particular report?
Not in today's analysis. We really looked at characteristics of the counties. Counties that had a higher prevalence of people with diabetes or arthritis or disability had higher rates of prescribing, and that kind of makes sense in terms of those conditions perhaps directly or indirectly being associated with greater pain issues. But this was an epidemiologic analysis, not an individual analysis. We do know that internists and other primary care physicians prescribe a large proportion of the opioids in the country, and so it's very important for the internal medicine audience to be aware of the guidelines for better prescribing and some of the tools that we've made available. We have a checklist that people can download, and I'm told 25,000 downloads of that checklist for safer prescribing have occurred. We've also got a mobile app, and quite a few thousand downloads of the mobile app have been made. So we really encourage clinicians to look for the new guidelines and some of the tools that make it easier for you to implement them in your practice.
Okay, thank you so much.
Next question.
Our next question comes from Sarah Carlin Smith from Politico.
I'm on the phone, Evelyn.
Your line is open.
Hi. You mentioned in your talk that there were a number of factors associated with higher opioid prescribing in counties, but can you give like a better sense of whether those are just things correlated with it, or whether there's any causation? You mentioned, you know, greater where there's more people uninsured or unemployed, more primary care physicians or dentists, greater percentage of white residents. It's just hard to get a sense of which one of those factors may be really driving prescribing and, you know, how it's sort of affecting the dynamics here.
Yes. You know, the factors likely are important, but only explain about one-third of all the variation. So we think the most important point about the county-level analysis is how wide that variation is, a six-fold difference from high-prescribing and low-prescribing counties, and we could not explain two-thirds of the difference just based on more accessibility to doctors and dentists who would be able to give opioids, or more people with those conditions that may require pain medication. So I think there's probably some nuances about each of the factors, whether they're directly or indirectly linked with greater pain use at the individual level. But the key point here is that clinical practice is really all over the place, which is usually a sign that you need better standards. These data are from 2015, before CDC released the guideline for prescribing opioids for chronic pain, and we hope that the 2016 guidelines are a turning point in more consistent and safer prescribing.
Can I just ask one quick follow-up? When would you expect to see if those 2016 guidelines make a difference? I mean, how many years down the line do you think we would.
You know, it can take a while to change practices, but I think there's some heartening news in today's report. We saw a reduction in high-dose prescribing starting in 2010, and in 2009 and 2010, two guidelines came out warning about very high-dose prescribing. It was actually heartening to see that as quickly as 2011 and 12, we started to see an improvement in that very high-dose prescribing. That said, clinicians are very used to how they've been practicing, and it helps to have reinforcements like prescription drug monitoring programs that you can look up whether a person's already gotten an opioid before you prescribe them, or academic detailing can help visit office practices and reinforce best ways to manage pain. So we are optimistic that some changes might occur quickly, but we have so much room for improvement that we think it will take time. The other important point is changing prescribing can help prevent people from getting addicted, but there's a very large population of people who are already addicted to opioid medications or to illicit drugs, and we know that it's important for there to be better access to treatment to help them with that addiction, as well as broader availability of naloxone to help reverse overdoses that may occur.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Next question.
Yes, our next question comes from Rich Lord with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Your line is open.
In the vital signs piece, you singled out, or I guess not exactly singled out, Kentucky, Ohio, and Florida as taking vigorous approaches and seeing reductions in most counties. Can you describe the strength of the correlation between prescribing patterns and state-level prescribing regulation, and maybe tell us which regulatory measures seem to correlate best to reductions, and finally, whether they've been taken universally by the states?
You know, one thing to say about those three states, Kentucky, Ohio, and Florida, was that they had extremely high levels of prescribing. The situation in Florida was quite different because instead of picking up your prescription from the pharmacy, they had physicians directly providing the opioids. So their state bill really not allowing that practice anymore, requiring providers to put their prescriptions into a prescription drug monitoring program and so forth, had a pretty rapid effect. There is good data, including a meta-analysis in Health Affairs, which talks about the relationship between mandated prescription drug monitoring use and the effect on prescribing, as well as pain clinic regulations have had an effect. So there's good data on several state policies. There is also emerging data about innovative interventions like internet-based physical therapy or internet-based behavioral therapy as potentially safer approaches to pain management, even in places with limited access to on-site care.
But are there things that states have not yet done that seem to work, that some states have not yet done, or has everybody pretty much adopted the best practices nationally?
You know, there's quite a bit more room for improvement. I believe that Kentucky, Ohio, and Florida were some of the earliest states to put in place policies, but we're seeing statewide policies in more states, and there is more to do. Even in states with policies, the prescription drug monitoring programs themselves can become more useful or usable for clinicians. I know that when I visited Kentucky, I learned about interstate access to data, so clinicians could look up not only prescribing from clinicians within their state, but as a state that borders several other states, they had worked out data sharing agreements with neighboring states. So I would say there's a incremental improvements possible even in places that have really been ahead of the curve in getting state programs and policies in place. This epidemic is really bigger than all of us, and so the best practices that we identify in Kentucky or Florida, we're really trying to make sure to share. CDC has been supporting more than 40 states to strengthen their prevention of prescription drug opioid programs, And we're now supporting a number of states in tackling the illicit drug problem as well. We know that this is a big problem which needs all of us working together.
Thank you.
Next question.
Yes, our next question comes from Dan Bergano with BuzzFeed News. Sir, your line is open.
Thanks very much. I'm wondering if you could say a little bit, how much caution should we have about reporting 2015 statistics a year and a half later? Your guidelines came out last year, and they, as you mentioned, they probably did affect practice. So are we giving people, you know, an inaccurate snapshot by reporting this now, and is there any way to get more up-to-date information?
Timely and complete data is very important, and I think that a number of innovative approaches are being used to get more recent data. The analysis that we reported today we view as a baseline, pre-guidelines, and we look forward to analyzing data for 2017 and beyond to see what kind of impact the 2016 guidelines have had. We know that some programs, insurers and others, are looking at their own data to see what kind of effect has happened. I've seen a report from Cigna about their own covered patients and a decline in prescribing that they've seen since the 2016 guidelines came out. But we look forward to updating this report with more timely information following the guideline report. It's barely a year since the release, and we know that the tools that we've released to make it more accessible to people are still coming out. We're also looking forward to releasing some public service announcements later this year that we hope will reach consumers and help drive down demand for opioids for chronic pain, since they really seem to have an excessive harm-to-benefit ratio. Next question.
Yes, our next question comes from Justin Mattingly with Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to how much so many opioids being given out has put strain on hospitals and medical centers that are then having to treat the overdoses.
You know, the challenge for emergency departments and for hospitals, as well as the limited availability of treatment facilities or treatment access, is a huge challenge. You know, as we've looked at prescribing practices by type of clinicians, one of the earliest groups that we saw improvements in, as I'm told, was in emergency department clinicians, because those probably are the people who've been seeing this, you know, the negative effects of opioids up close. I know that we've seen spot shortages of naloxone, the drug that reverses overdoses in some areas, and, you know, you've seen reports of the medical examiners and coroner's offices that really don't have space to store the body. So this is just a tragic outbreak in so many levels. Improvements in prescribing are a beginning, but we have so much more work to do.
Thank you.
Next question.
Next question comes from Mike Stobie, the Associated Press. Your line is open, sir.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Actually, the question I logged in with has been answered, but I do want to ask one other, which was, is there data available, or can you look at the county level also on the number of providers in each county that were prescribing opioids? Was there some pill mills were shut down, a geographic shift from one county to the other? Is there any more data that's available on that can help explain some of the trends in the counties?
Well, let me begin and then see if Dr. Dow wants to add anything. You know, Florida took a pretty tough stand against the pill mills with a statewide regulation that went into effect. And if you look in the MMWR at the counties that saw improvement over the time period from 2010 to 2015, it's fairly impressive how much improvement there was throughout the state of Florida. It's actually the most decreased state that you can find. Although there's still some high prescribing counties, they did have quite a big impact. But in terms of the subtleties of the ability for us to look at pill mills or shifting practices, let me let Dr. Dowell respond.
Yes, for this analysis, we did not have provider and patient level data to look at those specifics, who exactly was prescribing in each county, but we did use other data sources such as the number of primary care providers and dentists per capita from the Dartmouth Atlas of Healthcare to try to get a handle on some of those factors. But for, in this particular analysis, we were not able to get to those factors at that granular level.
I mean, one of the things, it's back to me, Dr. Shuket, but one of the things that we do encourage for health plans or other programs that have access to the different providers in their system, academic detailing or feedback to clinicians about their practices compared to others can be helpful. We found that helpful for antibiotic use prescribing, and we think that kind of approach may be helpful for this as well. But as Dr. Dowell described, this particular database didn't allow us to do that kind of analysis. Next question.
Next question comes from J.T. Lane with the AV News. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. The Arizona governor recently declared a state emergency over the opioid epidemic. How have you seen Arizona affected, and do you know of any particular county with outliers with respect to number of prescriptions?
You know, for the county-level data in Arizona, if you follow up with our media office, they'll be able to get you all the specifics for that, and that may be the best way to go. Just for all the reporters, if you contact our media office, we can get you the data of county-specific results. We know that for the local and state papers, those are really, really important, and we do encourage authorities, communities, and you know, the health departments to use those data as spot maps before the 2020 guidelines of how prescribing was spread across the state. I should caution people that the county is where the prescription was picked up, at basically the pharmacy, not where a person lived. So you know, we've reported in the past that people who live in rural areas have a much higher risk of opioid-related overdose than in other areas, and we didn't find rural counties as associated with high prescribing in this analysis. That's probably because of lack of pharmacies in the rural areas, and people who resided in rural areas may be traveling to the towns, larger towns or small cities near them. So, you know, there's some cautions around the county maps, but we are happy to make those data available to each of you.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Our next question comes from Don Sapekin with the Philadelphia Inquirer. Your line is open.
Talking about, and I didn't get anything, a link or a file. Should I have gotten something?
Oh, about the county level data,
or even anything broader, any kind of
office,
vital signs.
And they'll be giving out the phone number for that at the end of the call. But yes, you should be able. You may not have gotten it yet, unless you already asked for it. But we're happy to provide that to those who are interested.
Okay, thank you.
I think we have time for one more question, operator.
Okay. Our last question comes from Lynn Peterson with Trends in Medicine. Your line is open.
Hi. I actually have sort of a combination question. So let me just throw them all out, and you can answer them in order however you want. Are there particular opioids that stand out as a problem, is my first question. And is there any breakdown between overdose deaths between heroin and prescription opioids? And lastly, do you see any impact of abuse deterrent opioids?
Wait, the last, what was the last one? Any impact?
Any impact from abuse deterrent opioids.
Oh, I see. Okay. So let me try to do these quickly and let Dr. Dowell help. The breakdown, let me do your second questions first. In 2015, overall, there were about 52,000 deaths from drug overdose. Almost two-thirds, or 33,000 of them, had an opioid involved. 15,000 involved a prescription opioid, and the others would have been either illicit opioids or potentially some of those that were not counted as opioid-associated probably had opioids, but the drugs were not specified. We know there's a lot of overlap between both prescription and illicit opioids on board and between opioids and other drugs on board. There are challenges in the toxicology testing and the backlogs for toxicology testing, as well as the final results from some of the coroner's and medical examiner's offices. Now, in terms of prescription medicines and which ones stood out, I'll let Dr. Dowell handle that and the deterrent drug question.
Sure. So in this analysis, we didn't present results on individual opioids, but we did look at a number of different individual opioids just to make sure that what we were seeing was not a result of any one of them in particular. And what we found was that the patterns we're describing really seemed to hold true, the changes from 2010 to 2015 across the whole range of opioids. We do know from other studies in the past that long-acting opioids seem to be associated with greater overdose risk, especially when they're first started, and particularly methadone seems to be associated with a higher overdose risk. But that was not a finding of this particular analysis. We didn't report that with this particular analysis. In terms of the impact of abuse deterrent opioids, we didn't present this in the findings with this report, but we did attempt to look at that, and again, we didn't see anything in particular related to abuse deterrent opioids. And in the research in this field, in general, there's very little evidence about the impact of abuse deterrent opioids on risks like opioid use disorder and overdose. I should clarify, because even clinicians tend to misunderstand this. A lot of people think that abuse deterrent means that this formulation somehow prevents addiction, and that is not true. They just prevent manipulation of the opioid to use it through a route like injection that is not intended. And people can and still do develop opioid use disorder and can overdose orally, and we think that orally is the main route for both opioid use disorder and for overdose and overdose death.
Well, I want to thank everybody for calling in to today's report. Before I turn things back to Kathy Harbin, I just want to remind folks that the story here is that we're still seeing too many getting too much for too long in terms of opioid medications. We have three times as high use of opioids today in America as 1999, and nearly four times as high as Europe, and we're really seeing the toll on the families and neighborhoods around the country. So thanks for calling in, and Kathy will share with you how to follow up.
Sure. Thank you, Dr. Shuket and Dr. Dowell, for joining us today. Also, thank you to the reporters who've joined us. If you would like the data behind the map in the MMWR, you can call our media office at 404-639-3286. You can also email us at media@cdc.gov. Thank you again for joining us. This concludes our call.
Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.